sessions 7 to 9, which is the purpose of this day, actually, having given you a review of sessions 1 to 6.
Alex?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question from you?
Please.
Yeah. I wanted to ask it before the break, but I thought much better.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar. We just recently came up with what we call our leadership development process, and we've called it ILEAD, which is the 4 I's. Identification, impartation, instruction, and in internship as a process to sum up in the same way that we have the 4 E's, how to develop leaders. I guess my question, and this might be too, that might be too little for you to be able to answer on, but where is the place of mentoring in that process? Is it in the internship? Or is it in the instruction, or in the impartation, or in all? Do all of those elements constitute also mentoring in a general sense?
Okay, I need to familiarize myself. What are the 4 I's?
Identification.
Identify the leader.
Yes.
Who has potential?
Yeah.
All right.
The sense of the calling of God. And
right.
Seeing the gifting.
Right.
Instruction, which is like we're all familiar with, you know, where, you know, seminars, you know.
Okay.
Impartation, in our experience. The raise up a leader, they need to, your interaction has to involve imparting, you know, spiritual character, all those things. And then internship is the sense that you apprentice that person so that he can, and among all of those 4 I's, we, in our own analysis, we're strong on those 3, but really weak on internship. And this seems to me a possible answer to a process to cultivate that.
It's the last 2 I's in the impartation and internship. That's where the mentoring comes in.
Okay.
Because a seminar is not mentoring.
Okay.
It's I'm downloading information to you.
Okay.
Mentoring is more formation. Okay. It's a one-to-one thing. I mean, a classroom thing. Okay, you can say technically speaking, I'm mentoring you, but mentoring is life. One to one, so it's in the your definition of the 4 I's. It'll be in the impartation and internship. Yes, Paolo.
If I could actually add, maybe at a certain extent in instruction. If our definition is just classroom, then there's no mentoring there. But if instruction is maybe personal instruction or even a discipleship mode or a teaching mode, like, you know, Jesus would take aside Peter or John and say, hey, this is the things that you need to do 2 by 2, then that would be,
yes.
Mentoring,
yes.
Might also be involved in that.
Yes, definitely. I got a question during the break. The question was, is there a way to find out at what level I am with my people? Okay. And I said, yes. And the only way is to go to your people one at a time. Okay. We'll talk about it later. If you're a shepherd, you have to engage the sheep, one sheep at a time. And you do it level 2. It's called relationship building. And the time you have is coffee breaks, lunches, okay? You could say, hey, pare merienda tayo, okay? And you build relationship. You begin to ask the person, you know, make sure you come up with an index card to find out the name of his wife, number of children, names of the children, ages of the children. So that when you say, hi, kumusta si ganito, if you mention the name, that is very impressive. That shows a lot of that you've been thinking about them. And pretty soon they will open up to you. Now, you have to be aware of your position as pastor. You are up on a pedestal. Somewhere up on the pedestal. Depending on how informal the relationships are. At the lower levels, the lower the level of the person, the more up on the pedestal you are. And you have to be aware of that so you can bridge that gap through relationship building. It takes time. It takes time, okay? I had a participant in a Maxwell seminar. He went home, and what he did was he scheduled his people, okay, MWF, for a period of probably 3 to 4 months, okay? Monday is lunch with you, Wednesday is with you, Friday is with you. I mean, he was a tyrant. Next week is with you. Next Wednesday is with you. Next Friday is with you. And everybody was wondering, pare, may sabit ba tayo? You know, what happened? So after the first guy's lunch with the boss, they all congregated to his cubicle and said, what happened? Ewan ko. Tinanong lang niya, ilan daw anak ko? Ano raw pangalan ng asawa ko? And then the second guy went, and sabi, ganun din eh. And the third guy went, then they said, there's something wrong. You know? Bumabait. I mean, there's something wrong here. What's going on? So they over a period of time, after a while, it was no longer every other week. It was once a month. Until he was able to build some personal rapport with them. And ganun, it takes time. It takes time. You cannot compress. Kanya po, while your kids are small, boy, take that. I cannot overemphasize it. This is worth $8 trillion again. I cannot overemphasize because you cannot compress relationship development as I'm trying to do. But it's been 6 years since I retired, and I know I'm making progress. But it takes time. Okay. Okay. So, session 7. We have 4 hours for 3 sessions. So that we will have more time for discussion. So you've got some structural things in place. You're developing managerial competence. You're learning to become a person of influence. You're mentoring, coaching, and learning to empower your people. You now need to create the environment to sustain this. You do this by cultivating the right attitudes to engender or give birth to a team culture. Everyone say attitude. Attitude. Everyone say team culture. Team culture. Okay, attitude. The right attitudes will cultivate a team culture. Chuck Swindoll said, life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. Referring to attitude. We have almost no control over life. What we only control is our response to life. Okay? Viktor Frankl, a Nazi concentration camp survivor, said, when we cannot change a situation, we are forced to change ourselves. Choosing one's attitude in any given situation is the last of one's freedoms. Now, this guy observed many of his fellow Jews starving to death. But many more died because of depression. They gave up on life. Okay? And he was at the brink of giving up on his own life when he realized, you know what? The prison might take away a lot from me, but they cannot take away my response to the situation. And he realized the tremendous freedom he had while in prison, that he still had control over his attitude, okay? And he survived, and this is what he's sharing to the world, okay? So, attitude is something you decide on, okay? Attitude is not imposed on you, okay? You control it, and it's a tremendous thing. Cultivating the right attitude helps you sustain a caring leadership style which drives a good team culture. We're talking about effective people management. In this session, we're going to talk about how to develop a team culture through the right attitudes, okay? You need 3 attitudes. You need to have the right attitude about 3 things. Number 1, yourself. Number 2, others. And number 3, life in general, okay? 3 things you must cultivate a positive attitude about: yourself, others, and life in general. We will deal with the first 2. Because if you deal with the first 2, a right attitude about yourself and others, the 3rd one takes care of itself. Okay? Because 99% of life is relationships, if you noticed. Okay? Whether it's a relationship with people or with things. Okay? So, question number 1, what is your attitude towards yourself? Okay? Do you like yourself? Look in the mirror in the morning and you see someone barely looking like Brad Pitt. Okay? or Brad's feet. Okay. Brad's feet. All right. What do you do? Well, if you're like me, you make the most of it, right? I mean, ganyan na lang yan. So, okay. You know, let's do an exercise, okay? You just have a piece of paper, any piece of paper, you could write on your manual, okay? I will ask you 4 questions, and I want you to rate yourself in a scale of 10, okay? Rate yourself in a scale of 10. 1 is the lowest, 10 is the highest, okay? And you can write the answers there. Don't show it to anyone. And by all means, don't copy from your neighbor, okay? Scale of 10, rate yourself as a financial provider for your family. 1, your family is starving, shame on you. 10, you're so comfortable you can even support other people. 5 seconds, 1, 2, 3, I need a number. 4, 5, okay, just 1 number, scale of 10. Number 2, scale of 10. 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest. Rate yourself as a pastor. Preacher. Pastor and pastor. Rate yourself as a pastor. 1, you should have been a salesman. You should have been a car salesman. 10, you should be heading every nation. Right? Rate yourself as a pastor. Okay? 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? Number 3. Scale of 10. 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest. Rate yourself as a citizen of the Philippines. Okay? 1. The citizenship must be stripped away from you and you should be deported. And 10, you ought to consider running for president. Okay? 5 seconds. The extent to which you obey the law. The extent to which you pay your taxes. Blah, blah, blah. As a citizen. Scale of 10. 1. Everything. Okay? 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Just 1 number. Okay? Finally, rate yourself, scale of 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, as a person. 1, you probably should not have been born. 10, you are the model to mankind. 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Time's up. Okay? Time's up. According to psychologists, the highest rating that you should have given to yourself was in number 4. As a matter of fact, it should be 10. Okay? And by the way, if it is not 10, will you kindly make it 10 right now? I'll tell you why. The first 3 ratings are ratings of performance. How you perform as a financial provider. How you perform as a pastor. How you perform as a citizen. The 4th rating is a rating of value. Value. There is no person that is below 10. Okay? Everyone is a 10. Why do I know this? John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life. Regardless of your performance as a financial provider. Regardless of your performance in your function. Regardless of your performance, regardless how many times you jaywalk. Okay? Or beat the red light. Okay? Those are ratings on performance. Number four is a rating of value, and it reflects your attitude towards yourself. Okay. If you have not rated yourself a 10, welcome to the club. Few egomaniacs do it. But the truth of the matter is this. I don't care how insecure you are, my friend, dear brother, you are a 10. Okay? Because God says so. Huh? God says so. Now, why is it important to understand that I am a 10? Because unless I consider myself a 10, which I am, I will never see others as 10s. As fellow tens. Okay? So, if you want to become an effective leader, you had better like yourself very much. Okay? I don't care what your dad told you. I don't care what your mom told you. And I don't care what your kindergarten teacher told you. Okay? I don't care what your discipler told you. You are a ten. And that's coming from God Himself. Okay? I gave this illustration and in a public seminar, and some smart dude said, "Oh, Alex, okay, we know you're a pastor, and that's probably your belief, kasi John 3:16. I mean, how dare I throw a verse at a public seminar where people pay me money?" I said, "Okay, what's your calling?" He said, "Look, what if I don't believe in the Bible? Does that still... is that still valid? Am I still a 10? I said, "Okay, let's take it to a non-religious area. Let's say we are on a ship, the Titanic. Titanic strikes an iceberg, begins to sink. We get on a lifeboat that can carry 100 people. There are 50 of us, therefore 50 more people can come in. As we row away from the boat, we see 200 people swimming towards us. There are only 50 seats left. If we exceed 100, kasi 50 na tayo, 50 seats, if we exceed 100, we will all die." Okay? So, 200 people are swimming towards the boat. Who 50 should we save? So, some of the class said, "Children first." Okay, let's say there are no children swimming towards the boat. And somebody said, "Oh, the old people first." Let's say there are no old people swimming towards the boat. In fact, let us say all of them are 35-year-olds. Split evenly, male and female, just to get the point. Who do we save? What's your answer?
Let the sharks determine.
Diba? Whoever comes, yeah. Luther?
Let the sharks determine.
What if after the sharks are done, there are still 100? Who, now put yourself in this situation. Who actually, what if you're the captain of that lifeboat and you have authority? Who do you save?
Tell them to row faster.
Okay, abandon them. Okay. Paolo, yeah. Paolo, I need to talk to this guy later, okay? He jaywalks, he does not obey that. I mean, and then he's going to abandon, okay. Who will you save? The only logical answer, hindi po ba, is who is the nearest? You get the 50 nearest people. And then, and only then, can you row away. With tears in your eyes, heartbroken, but you have no choice. Why? Because everyone is a 10, whether you believe in God or not. Are you with me? Wala si God doon, ha? Wala si God doon. It's pure human instinct. Because in every human being is the breath of life. And there's something godly about us, even though you're a pagan. You see. So, everyone is a 10. Okay, now let's bring this home. Are your children a 10? Or is it does it depend on their grades? Do you like your children more when their grades are higher? I tell my children, I would prefer that you were all summa cum laude. But I want to tell you, my love for you would not increase one iota. In fact, if you fail, my love for you will not decrease one iota. So one of my sons tested it and began to fail all of his subjects. True story. True story. Okay? Got kicked out. Okay? Ateneo. So we appealed. He was accepted back. Okay? After a year, got kicked out again. For good. And he said, it's tough to be kicked out from Ateneo twice. But I managed to do it. Okay. So, that kid tested my love. Suddenly, theory came crashing down to earth. And you know, I experienced it. I mean, I was heartbroken. Really heartbroken. But you know what? I learned the love of God. That regardless of performance. And that kid has not become insecure because of his failure. Okay? So, unless you consider yourself a 10, you will not be able to see others as 10s. And if you don't, then you will never become an effective and influential people manager. Okay? Wow. So, what is your attitude towards others? You have in your workbook, of, I understand, a worksheet. Self-appraisal, what is your attitude towards others? I will give you a minute. Okay, I'll be nice. I'll give you 2 minutes. Will you fill that up for me? What page is it, Ferdy?
17.
Page 17, okay. Ready? Go. Okay. If you're getting ones and twos, you got to work on ones and twos, okay? Work on ones and twos. I just want to share with you, I had a boss who I thought was the smartest guy I ever met. I don't know if I told you the story. UP Magna Cum Laude, Industrial Engineering, Industrial Management, and then a fellow in Stanford and Carnegie Mellon. 2 master's degrees in the U.S. on full scholarship. His dream was to become the president of a multinational company subsidiary before the age of 30. Or by the age of 30. By the age of 30, he was president of a pharmaceutical company. And by the age of 35, he was regional president for Asia. Okay? Then he quit that company and joined the company where I worked for him. He was my boss. And I learned a lot from him. And he was very smart. He's one of those people that when you're talking to him, you could almost hear him think. That kind of smart. But he was also extremely insecure. And I could not understand why. Then I realized, a friend of his told me about his childhood background. When he was growing up. And his parents were educators. And they were very grade conscious. Apparently, they favored his elder brother. Siya magna cum laude, yung kuya niya summa cum laude. And he carried that insecurity all his life. I mean, if my kid comes home with a green certificate for attendance, we would go for dinner. I mean, magna cum laude, are you kidding me? See, except, yun po sinasabi ko eh. See, when parents look at their children on a performance basis, the affection will follow the performance. As opposed to the affection being the performance being irrelevant to the affection. And fathers, my dear brothers, we fall into this trap very easily. We must watch ourselves. Okay? We must watch ourselves. Okay? On this self-appraisal, it is, we're going towards your attitude towards others. Okay? So I was doing this in one of my seminars, and it was a high technology company. We were in Highlands, Tagaytay. This was the high tech company. There were 13 people. All 12 were country managers of Southeast Asia subsidiaries. The 13th was the vice president. And when I took this survey, one of them asked the question. He said, "Alex, how do you develop a positive attitude towards others?" And if you're a seasoned facilitator, you will understand what he meant was, I don't have a positive attitude towards others, but you can't embarrass him, so you kind of ride along. So I said, I pointed to him line number 3. I said, "I don't know how to cultivate a positive attitude towards others, but I will tell you what will block a positive attitude towards others. And it is, I forgive slights rather than hold a grudge." If you have an unforgiving heart, I said, your heart essentially will be hardened. And if you continue to hold that grudge, you will fall into what we call bitterness. The problem with bitterness is this. Let's say this group offended me. Okay, these 3 guys offended me. And I swore I will never talk to them again. I'll never forgive them. And I hold on to that grudge for years. I become hardened and embittered. When I deal with this new set of people, what happens is my eyes are defiled. I look at them and I say, wait a minute. These guys look like those guys. I.e., they're human beings too. I begin to my attitude towards them is defiled. And so he said, okay, let's assume I agree with you, which means he completely agreed with me. How do you combat bitterness? How do you deal with it? I said, well, you forgive. He said, how do you do that? So I said, you know, I referred to some retreats. I said, what we do in our church is we ask people to list down all of the people who have offended them that they have not yet forgiven. Column 1, name of offender. Column 2, offense. And the details thereon. Okay? And then you stare at that list in the privacy of your room. And one by one, psychologists say you must revisit the core of your hurt. You must revisit the root of your hurt and release it, meaning forgive. So you take one person and one offense at a time and say, yeah, I remember this person hurt me. And I remember the hurt. But now I choose to forgive. Then move on to the next offender. And the next offender. And then he told me, but Alex, who can do that? Now, before that seminar, I was briefed not to talk about God. But so I looked at the VP. I said, look, I can't answer that question unless I talk about God, because I don't have any other answer. He said, answer it, because I want to know the answer also. So I said, you can tell it was an evangelistic opening. Okay. So I said, look, in my belief system, and I said, full disclosure, I'm a born-again Christian. Okay. In my belief system, we walk around as sinners. But God, in his love for us, he sent his son, Jesus, to die on the cross to pay for our sins. And so even though we are sinners, we walk around as forgiven sinners. Okay? And God looks at us like he would look at his son, that we have, as if we have not sinned at all. We are forgiven. And as a result of this belief that we are forgiven, we are able to forgive. In fact, it is the only basis that we are able to forgive. The realization how much we have offended God and how much he has forgiven us in return.
Yes.
Yep. Okay? Yep. So he told me, true story, Alex, where'd you hear that? Where'd you learn that? From my pastor. And he said, he's a Buddhist guy.
He said, will you give me his number? And I told the people, you know what? Until you develop the vertical dimension of your life, you will never learn to forgive. And at the core of the ability to build relationships is a positive attitude towards others. And at the core of that is a forgiving heart. Therefore, at the core of leadership effectiveness is a forgiving heart. You want to be an effective, influential leader, learn to forgive. Okay? Learn to forgive. It was an amazing, absolutely amazing exchange there. And I don't think, not one was a Christian. Okay? But I never had the opportunity to follow up. Okay, so, learn to forgive. The best way, when you have a bad attitude towards others, believe me, my brothers, look into your heart and examine if there is any root of bitterness that is still there. Sabi ng Bible, let every root of bitterness. Did you notice? He said root.
Yeah.
Meaning, on the surface, wala na yung puno eh. But there are still roots, you see. Trees die from the top. The roots are the last to go. See, the tree of bitterness may be gone, but the roots of bitterness are still there. So, when you're having problems with other people, spend time quietly and I ask the Lord, will you convict me? What other garbage have I not yet put at the foot of your cross? Okay? And learn to forgive. Focus on collaboration, not combat, and seek win-win solutions. Because conflict is inevitable, but combat is optional. Everyone read with me. Conflict is inevitable, but combat is optional. Conflict is inevitable because of different differences in perspectives, in backgrounds, etc. You must be aware that people, you and I, have a win-lose default mindset. All right? Exercise. We'll get a partner. Get a partner. This is a one-minute exercise. The setup is... will take longer than the actual assignment. I need you to get a partner. And I want you to stand up and face your partner. Come on, get a partner, everybody. I hope we have an even number here. Partner, partner, okay. Partner, 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 okay. Come on, stand up, stand up, stand up. Face your partner. Stand up, face your partner. Does everybody have a partner? Everybody? Okay, everybody? Okay, now, I want you to do Jack and Poi. In English, that is, ano ba yon? Rock, paper, and scissors. Okay, best of three, go! Best of three. Best of three, okay. Okay, all finished. Okay, winners. Can I have your attention? Can I have your attention, please? Okay. Yung iba kinarir na. Winners. Winners, raise your hand. All winners, raise your hand. So, winners, what I want you to do is to face your partner and fold your arms like this. Face your partner and fold your arms like this. Okay, now, the non-winners, what I want you to do in 10 seconds, is to try to unfold your partner's arms using any means except violence. Okay, 10 seconds. Ready? Go. Okay, time's up, time's up, time's up.
I got it.
Okay. So, how many were able to unfold the arms of their partners? How many? Okay. Okay. Bishop Manny, what did you do? Very good. Big hands. You may sit down. What did you do? Can you please unfold your arms? Very good. Sit down. What did you guys do? Extended. Okay. Very good. What did you do? Please. Okay. You may sit down. Same. Okay. Sino ba kayo? Please, okay, everybody in the close up. Okay, that's manipulation. You want to sit down? Yeah. Humility, manipulation, that's pressure. Kinausap ka, binibigyan ikaw. Kinilindi ka, hindi pwede. Okay. Lahat ng nakiusap, correct. Lahat ng gumawa, ng ngiliti, ng pressure, ng dukot, ng pera, whatever. Sit down, okay. The best way is to ask your partner. Pare, paki-unfold naman. The typical way is to try to manipulate your partner, to pressure your partner, to bribe your partner. In some seminars, they got the cell phone and say, I'm going to drop this if you don't unfold your arms. Okay? That's pressure. That's manipulation. In some, they picked up their pocket and say, look, 20. Ayupa, 50. 100. You know, bribery can work, but it is not a good long-term strategy. Okay? Now, question. To those whose arms were folded, how many of you did not unfold your arms? How many? Raise your hands. How many did not unfold? Okay, why did you not unfold your arms? Sky. Oh, no, I did not. Sabi nga ni Cuevas, you're earner. There were no instructions, you're earner. Okay? Why did you not unfold your... Sino ba dito? Why did you not unfold your... Why? Why not?
I'm not sure if he's telling the truth, like he's going to cheat you for that.
Okay. Sino ba? Huh? Okay, why did you not want to? Why? No, why?
Because he loses the jacket point.
Why didn't you not want to?
Well, there was no follow-up instruction from the first one. You said fold the arms.
Yeah. That's right. So... I did not say, under no circumstances, do not unfold your arms. Why did you not want to? Think about it.
Because she's full of bitterness.
What? Yes.
I think it's because we automatically fall into competition.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. In fact, I gave you a hint. You're partners. Face your partner. I was trying to tell you to cooperate with one another. But the exercise is meant to tell you and me that we have a win-lose default mindset. In any situation we walk in, ang default mindset natin is win-lose. And until we are aware of it, we cannot combat it. So you must be aware that you tend as a human person to have a win-lose mindset. If you are aware of it, you will be able to restrain it and be able to relate to people better. You know, if you're my leader and my feeling is if I follow you, I lose, why should I follow you? You see. Kumbaga, in Tagalog, I mean, kung susundan kita para akong naisahan, wala akong ganang sumunod sa iyo. You see. So, your posture as a leader cannot be win-lose. You see, it has to be a win-win, and you can't fake it, by the way. It's going to show in your non-verbals, you see. It's going to show in your non-verbals. So, let's bring this home, okay? I mean, do you have a win-lose mindset with your spouse? Duh, do I have to ask that question? I mean, and that was what I was telling my friend. He said, how come we're always fighting? I said, duh, welcome to married life. I mean, I said, we all have a win-lose mindset. Until we realize we have a win-lose mindset, we cannot restrain it. Okay? Now, worse, bring it home. If your children see you as a win-lose dad, why should I obey? If I obey you and I feel I lose, wow, why should I obey? That's why I go to my barkada. Because it's all win-win with my barkada. Okay? Etc. Etc. Okay. Okay, so... Then, we're talking about attitudes, okay? So, learn to ask for forgiveness and then learn to forgive. Okay? Everyone, learn to ask for forgiveness and learn to forgive. Okay? When I was promoted to president in Del Monte 10, 12 years ago. As a VP, my favorite enemy was the HR VP. I mean, he was really, I loved making him my enemy, and he hated my guts, I hated his guts, okay? As I confess to the Lord now, okay? Then I was promoted. He heard me, I heard him. Then I was promoted to president. And my response, here's my chance, you know? He then became my subordinate, I was his boss. But I realized what I had to do, okay? I mean, if you have 6,000 employees, you cannot afford, as president, not to have a good relationship with your HR VP, okay? So the first guy, I knew what God wanted me to do. The first guy I called in was this VP HR person. And like a true blue Filipino, he came in. We Filipinos, we know our politics. He came in, he said, "Good morning, Alex. Congratulations on your promotion." And in my heart, I said, "Yeah, right." So I said, "Come in, Jimmy." Jimmy sits down where, you know, mere mortals sit there in the visitor's chair. And I decide to come down from my pedestal and sit in front of him where the mere mortals sat, okay? And I said, "Jimmy, I need your support." "You have my support." Sabi, politiko talaga. Filipinos know their politics. "Jimmy, I need your help." "You have my help." I said, "Jimmy, we have not gotten along very well." Then he was silent. And I said, "Jimmy, I know I've offended you." Even more silent. And I said, "Jimmy," I look him in the eye. I said, "Jimmy, will you forgive me?" You know, Jimmy blurted out something. To us men, we can't handle these things. I mean, you know. So he blurted out something. I mean, alang naman mag-lips to lips pa tayo rito. So, he said, "There's nothing to forgive." And so I took that as having been forgiven. We shook hands, he left. You know, that repair was so precious to me as a new leader that he worked his butt off, pardon the expression, and became responsible for making Del Monte win Employer of the Year Award for the third time in 20 years. And to my delight, it was during my watch that the third time Del Monte was awarded Employer of the Year was during my watch as president. But because I asked for forgiveness, Jimmy and I were like this. Today, we're like brothers. I mean, his relatives got hit by Sendong, and I called him up, and he was even shy to ask for help. So I mobilized the old XCOM, and I said, "Hey, look, Jimmy needs help," and we generated cash for his family. This guy would call me. We were both retired. He'd call me and say, "Alex, I miss you already. Can we have coffee?" I mean, wow, he's not gay, huh? But, you know, I assure you. You know, the tenderness of a friendship, okay, that is repaired. Okay? You know the story. The broken bone, when it heals, the point of healing is stronger than the bone itself, than the texture of the bone. It's the physiology of our body is a message from God on forgiveness. Okay? That's about forgiving. Now it's about asking for forgiveness. My boss, when I was a VP marketing, was a guy named George Error. Believe it or not, his name was George Error. And he landed in the Philippines, and 2 weeks later, we were in Intercon, and there was an award for excellence in marketing management by the this publication, and Cory Aquino was the one presenting the awards. This is a big deal. And I was the awardee. Del Monte was the awardee. George, being new in the Philippines, he was there. The other awardees went up, and the president called the marketing person. When George went up, he received the award, and he didn't call me. Now, as a marketing person, I mean, you get an award like that with the president of the country giving the award, that is the highlight of your career. Okay? And I was crushed. And people were coming to me, and well, eventually people dragged me up during when everything was finished. There was picture taking with Corey, blah, blah, blah. So they dragged me up, so I got myself into the picture. But I did not get my moment. Okay. Next morning, he called me in. And he said, Alex, you have a very stupid boss. Which is his macho way of asking for forgiveness. I said, George, it's okay. I forgive you. But the words were very hard to come from my mouth. And when I was telling my wife, she said, well, never mind. You know, we know the scorekeeper, and he sees everything. So, you know, these two instances are just two instances. Well, there's another one. There was a sexual harassment case. I was already present. And so I told the individual sales manager, I said, look, I want you to go home and tell your wife what happened and ask your wife's forgiveness. Now, I want your wife to come here because we will get the lady who you supposedly harassed and we will ask for her forgiveness. And then we will ask the family of that girl to have dinner with a representation from the company and we will ask for their forgiveness. Before this, the family was about to sue us for sexual harassment. Okay? Nothing happened. It was words. Pakimasahin naman dyan, ganon. Okay? It would give me a massage. But it was out of town, and the girl was young, and it's kind of vulnerable. And we took a humble stand. We asked for forgiveness. And the family forgave us. And I got the most beautiful letter I ever got in my life. The sister was a lawyer. And she said, Mr. Castillo, I cannot, there are no words to tell you how much we admire the way the company handled the situation. Okay? The culture of forgiveness began to grow in the company. And I'll tell you more about that after lunch. We just lost time. Let me just wrap up with this, okay? You know, the right attitude creates the right culture. The key ingredient in team culture is forgiveness. The asking of forgiveness and the granting of forgiveness. Of course, the foundation of that is humility. Okay? And praise the Lord, we have the Holy Spirit to restrain our pride when we are tempted to be proud. But we're talking about effectiveness in people management. And I tell you, it's more spiritual than anything else. Because if you want a team to be solid, you need to cement those relationships through humility and the granting of forgiveness and the asking of forgiveness. And we'll talk more about this after lunch. Thank you. Yeah.
I meant to say this earlier, but you may have heard of this illustration, but I want to share it anyway about the word attitude, which might be helpful. I heard this years ago, and I never forgot it. Attitude is actually a sailing term. It's used in sailboats. Mm-hmm. And attitude is the angle by which you direct the angle of the sail. And sailboats, have winds coming from every direction. Now, I guess ideally you think that the wind should come from the back behind you so that it'll propel you forward. But what if the wind is in front, is coming against you? What happens is if you set the attitude of the sail right, you can actually angle the sail in such a way that even if the wind is coming in front of you, it can actually still move forward.
Excellent.
So I think that's just a good illustration to show what attitude does, having the right attitude to propel a team forward. Excellent. So I just thought I'd share that for you and for everyone.
Excellent. Thank you.
Great. 1:30.